Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hi.
We've got the show's namesake, BJ Shea.
Oh, I'm still here.
He's back. And running the boards is Joey Deez.
Hello.
Oh, you didn't do any Wednesday.
Oh, it's Wednesday.
Yeah, one job.
On today's Wednesday, I will get into an amazing new Kickstarter that is about tabletop RPGs in space.
Ooh.
It's amazing. Also, BJ will be talking about, well, board games, because he wants to talk about board games.
Okay.
We'll talk about the comic book TV show Jupiter's Legacy. And, yeah, we'll be talking about that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. You can have our blogs, podcasts, and more. Or just search for BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app to find us.
Exactly. And got a lot of stuff going on today, so let's get right into it.
Moving on. I had a chance to spend a little time with two of the creative people behind an awesome new tabletop RPG called Into the Motherlands. Now, what is Into the Motherlands? Right now, it's currently on Kickstarter and going on until June 19th. You can check it out right now. It's already fully funded and lots of really amazing stuff that are going along with it. But it is set on the adopted home planet of Musalia, where humans arrived over 1,500 years ago. Fans of Wakanda and Star Trek will find a comfortable fit in this universe where players can play as descendants of an alien culture that called Musalia home before humans ever arrived, or you can be one of the cultures that evolved from the blending of human and alien technology over the centuries. The gameplay focuses on cultures, skills, and values, and the characters' abilities are built around what they're good at and what they care about to ensure a fully invested outcome. Like I said, Into the Motherlands right now is on Kickstarter. You can check it out by searching for Into the Motherlands. With me today is Tanya DePass, the creator and creative director of Into the Motherlands, and B. Dave Walters, the lead developer. If you have heard of Tanya DePass, she is director and founder of I Need Diverse Games, a not-for-profit organization based in Chicago, which is dedicated to better diversification in all aspects of gaming. Also, she is a person who is a part of the Black Dice Society, a new horror RPG based in Wizards of the Coast's iconic Ravenloft setting, and she has also been a part of OrcaCon for the local people out here. B. Dave Walters has done a ton of stuff, including Dungeons & Dragons, A Darkened Wish for IDW Comics. He is also Baron Victor Temple on Vampire the Masquerade's LA by Night on the World of Darkness Twitch. He's also the DM for the Black Dice Society. You can go and find B. Dave Walters at B. Dave Walters on Instagram and Twitter, and Cypher of Tear for Tanya on Twitch, Twitter, and Instagram. And without any further ado, let's talk with our guests. I would love it if you guys would explain a little bit about the lore and how you've arrived to this project.
Dave, if you'd like to go first. I was like hearing Dave talk.
And, you know, that it's my special power, so thank you. Yeah, history and lore, again, one of the guiding principles that we came upon very quickly in this story is we wanted a story with no colonialism, no Eurocentric expansionism as kind of the framework of the narrative. We play a lot of D&D. We love D&D, but I think we're full up on Eurocentric fantasy. And once we knew that that was the itch we wanted to scratch, then we had to come up with a way that we could tell the story that would make sense. Like, one of the original ideas we had was for modern day people of color that have like left and gone out into space. But the reality is, in many ways, it's too late for us. And there'd be some garbage that we would take with us. So we needed a world where they hadn't even encountered that ever. And that was how we set upon the idea of the African Emperor Mansa Musa, who was a real person. He was arguably the richest man in history. And at one point, he sent a fleet to discover the New World, which the traditional historical viewpoint is they just never arrived. Personally, I think they did arrive and became the Olmecs, but that's neither here nor there. So for our narrative, through a mechanism that has as yet been unrevealed to the players, these people, 1,000 years ago or so, 600-700 years ago, were transported to another planet. And now another 2,000 years have elapsed past that. So it was, what's the, as a thought experiment, logically, these people in this new environment, where would that be drawn out to? What kind of decisions would they make as part of their survival tactics? And that's where our different cultures came from, and the different branches from people that are identifiably human, that, you know, would still have human DNA as we recognize it, to some people that have symbiotic relationships with plants or other species from the planet. Some people have gone into becoming cyborgs, all the way to the point of being sentient AI that are no longer identifiably human. And that's not even including all the alien races. But the lore was essentially steeped in having an outgrowth of one of the most advanced cultures of color from history, and then logically take that out to where it could have gone if, quite frankly, not messed up by manifest destiny and greed.
It's an interesting take on all of that, because a lot of the history that you've mentioned has been foreign to me and hasn't ever been brought up. So it seems exciting to have all that for everybody out there.
Yeah, and we wanted to get across that, you know, the cultures of this game are not a monolith, because the cultures of this world now are not a monolith. You know, black and brown people are not all the same. And we wanted to get that across, woven into just the core DNA of this story, in playing with some other aspects and representations of the alien races and whatnot. But I want Tanya to make sure she has a chance to say what she wanted to say to this here.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no worries. I was just sitting there like, Dave's got it. I'm cool. You know, what we wanted to do was give people an option to see themselves, but see themselves in sci-fi and an RPG where we normally don't get to exist. When you see brown people in most sci-fi, we're coded as aliens, as other. And it's like, yeah, there's aliens, but there's very clearly black humans that are on this planet that are descended from royalty, and it's not a story of tragedy. It's not a story of hardship. We're not making the sci-fi edition of 12 Years a Slave. And I know 12 Years a Slave won an Oscar and everything, but Dave and I have talked about this a lot, where a lot of times the stories that sell about blackness, about being a person of color, are always tragedy. It's always the how bad can it be, and how much of a terrible thing do we have to overcome? And with this, none of that happened to our people. They got off Earth by whatever device we've yet to decide. And they never had that shackle. They never had that problem. So it is what it is.
We've yet to reveal. We know what it is. We've yet to reveal.
Look, I'm not fully on the writer's side, so I don't get spoiled for the stream. So I'm treating it like I know nothing. I know nothing about that. I'm just over here in my corner, me and Invicta.
And it's beautiful, though, because you're seeing something, both of you, and so many people that you have brought to the table to be a part of this project. You're seeing this come to life, and seriously, congratulations. Funded in 90 minutes, still a long ways to go in the Kickstarter. Jeff, definitely go to kickstarter.com and check out Into the Motherlands, an original Afrofuturist TTRPG. Super easy to find, actually, because it's been posted everywhere, and everyone is really excited about that. It's got to be exciting for you just to go from, you know, concept to creation to now going for the massive distribution.
Yeah, but when we started this whole project, a game was the objective anyway, to put out a source book, setting book, whatever term we're using, because apparently there's semantics about that. But we always had we're going to put a book in people's hands so they can go play this game too. It was never the stream's going well, so let's make a game, because that's not how this quite usually works. But we always wanted this to be a thing people could go and explore themselves, you know? And we luckily have the foundation of the stream and the people that are into it and what everyone at the table for the show brings. And we're fortunate /20% fortunate, 8% we worked our asses off to make this happen, especially with how little time we had to make season one and the story come together. And as Dave likes to put it, it was like the Wallace and Gromit thing of you're riding the train tracks as you put them down.
Yeah, literally. That is what it was like. Yes, definitely.
Well, and I mean, even on the first stream, the first episode, you guys were just putting out there on spreadsheets. It was an absolute, like, you could tell that the foundation was there. You're, like you said, just putting it as you're going along. But it was still super intriguing to watch everybody get into that. And I'm glad that other people now can experience all of this in a crazy sci-fi setting. It looks really amazing.
Yeah, we when Tanya and Twitch first came to their agreement about the show and what it was going to be, it was it seemed like we had all the time in the world, and that was one of the first calls that we had that was like, okay, so wait a second. If we need to deliver X episodes by Y date, that means we need to launch here, which means the game needs to exist, which means. And what seemed like a whole lot of time was no time at all. I think we ended up having like 4 to 6 weeks to get a playable game ready in time for the show to launch. And we've kept building on it since then. And a lot of it has been built out of necessity, where it was like, well, here's a place we're going. We need to create that place. Okay, here's the kind of challenge they're going to be presented with. Cool, we need to have rules for that. Immediately when we were like, they're going to be on board a starship, I was like, dope, I'll come up with starship combat rules. And it's just been built out that way, which has been, and same thing when it was announced that Abrea was going to join the show. I sat down with her and I was like, what do you want to do that you think is dope? And I will make the class you want to play. Which is obviously not a luxury we have in most of the other content that we play. So that part of it has actually been pretty fun.
It seems like it would be amazing on that aspect. And I mean, just talking about different, like, we've just barely touched on like the races of species on the planet of Musalia, which is the main home planet of the setting. But you're just talking about like the professions. Like, these are amazing. First off, the names alone are just, they grab you. It's like Biopriest. I love it. I love Spine Ripper, because I mean, it kind of gets the point across. A lot of these things are just kind of putting you right into a setting and just grabbing you just simply by the names and the descriptions you have already on the Kickstarter page.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, Dave brought up that we both love D&D, we both play it professionally, we both contributed, and we actually took an intentional step away from very D&D nomenclature, and instead of races, there are cultures, instead of classes, there are professions, because the whole idea is that you could come from any culture on this planet and do anything as long as you have the skill to do it, unlike, let's say, D&D, Pathfinder, what have you, where if you're an ogre, the only thing you can do is be a barbarian. Or if you're an orc or something, people only see you as a fighter. They'll never think of you as like a warlock or a wizard or something, because, oh, you're born X height and your people traditionally have done whatever, then that's what you're stuck doing. So we turn that on its head for the game. You know, my character is a Hyenol, which is the hyenid race. And they're the smart ones. They are the scientists, the engineers, the teachers, the scholars. And I'm like, that's cool. I want to fight. So I continue to flip the die. But then we have Abrea, who joined us, and she also picked a Hyenol, but she's a very traditional Hyenol. And it's cool because we have the flexibility of the world is our oyster. We can literally go, I want this to work. And if it works, cool. It now exists. We could never do that with any other property.
Exactly. And there's been things that got mentioned in the stream that it was like, cool, need to make rules for that now. Like when Christina was like, I got cybernetic hair that'll let me jack into computers. It was like, okay, all right.
Nice.
And one of the things that we wove into the fabric of this, because again, you know, both Tanya and I have worked with WotC and their increased diversity in a lot of those efforts that is very good of them to be implementing. But, you know, that's a 50-year behemoth that is difficult to steer. Whereas we baked into the fabric of this, like, there are no attributes. The defining characteristics are skills and values. What thing have you consciously chosen to be good at, and what matters to you? And so each character is very unique and very individual, because anytime any correlation between race and morality is problematic, that, you know, you are bad because you were born this, or you're good because you were born this. And also, a lot of times, the, you know, this this race is more intelligent than that race, but this one is stronger. More often than not, it's the fair skin, pale ones are the smart ones, and the darker colored ones are the big, strong, dumb ones. And we wanted to get away from that from the jump. And like Tanya said, creating the Hyanol to look monstrous, but they're the engineers and philosophers, was intentional. And then to immediately subvert even that with having her character that's like, yeah, but that's not me, though. It was all very intentional to get across how people can exist and participate in this world.
That is fantastic in just the terms of when it feels that instead of, you know, people becoming, you know, stat junkies and kind of looking at that sort of thing, it lends more into the storytelling aspect of it, which is why I've enjoyed even watching the Twitch stream, because it turns everybody into a collaborative storyteller at that point.
Exactly. And I myself am an avowed min-maxer. I'm that dude. You know, I'm that dude in every game I play. And yet here I am lead designing a game where you can't really do that kind of intentionally.
Looking at all of the different lore and everything you've already put out there, I'm really excited for all of this. Again, people can check it out. Into the Motherlands, an original Afrofuturist TTRPG. It's on Kickstarter. It's all out there. You can watch Cypher of Tyr, the Twitch channel of Tanya. Just being able to check all of that out and even so much more. Being a lead designer and the creative director behind this, what has been the most exciting aspect for either of you?
I said this earlier, and I feel like I'm going to repeat myself a lot today with this. It's humbling, it's terrifying, but it's also exciting that we get to build from the ground up. If we say something exists, it exists. And also just getting to bring on people that we know are great at what they do, they're great designers, they're people that we know and respect, and putting out such a great product and getting to do this show every week. Like, Wednesday, Thursday nights are the highlight of my week because, you know, on Wednesdays, I get to play in the world we're creating, you know, in some cases, you know, as things happen. And in other times, you know, Eugenio's got an idea of what he wants to do, and hopefully we go along for the ride and don't make his life difficult as our storyteller. And then Thursday nights, I get to step into shoes I normally don't get to wear. I get to be Dave's mercy and, you know, step out of my comfort zone. And in both of these, it gives me a respite. You know, it's work. Don't get me wrong. It's still work. But it's work that I deeply enjoy. And for Motherlands, like I said, it's humbling. It's amazing. And I also, it just gives me an excuse to spend time with people I like, because otherwise, I don't know if I would talk to any of these people this often, because any of us that have tried to get together a weekly RPG game, let alone a stream, knows it's like herding cats.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, if you've ever tried to have, like, even a home group, even with the beauties of technology now, getting everyone together for a weekly game is suspect at best when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I was fortunate that when I cast the Black Dice Society, I got my first option. The first six people that I wanted all said yes. And it is literally the one time out of 168 hours a week that we're all available is the moment that you see the show, which is the time I wanted. So the time I wanted just happened to be everyone's availability. And there is literally no other time that we're all available. So in terms of what's been the best part about it, again, just that we're getting to do it, to, you know, storytelling is a passion of mine that I take very seriously. I think that's why diversity and inclusion are so important, is everyone needs to see themselves reflected in the media they consume as both hero and villain, to have something to aspire towards and to move away from, and to see every possible variation of yourself, where you can see what mask you want to put on or take off that day, and being able to give people the opportunity to not just live our story, but to be able to live their own stories is tremendously important to me, and something that I'm just very, very blessed to do.
So just massive respect for both of you with what you've done. Tanya, I think I've followed you since I found out you have played a part in OrcaCon, which is a local convention here, which is fantastic and one of the best little conventions up here in the Pacific Northwest. And through that, I've been fortunate enough to find you, B. Dave Walters, as well, and so many other people. I'm so happy to be able to, you know, help promote this in any sort of aspect. So seriously, thank you for putting out this product and putting so much heart and soul into this.
You're welcome. And knock on wood, we'll get to be in person for OrcaCon next year.
Thank you so much for spending some time with me on this. Very excited for this. Again, you can check it out. If you just search on Kickstarter, Into the Motherlands, you'll get there. It's already back, but you have until June 19th to make this happen. It's an all or nothing, but we already got all the all. So lots of other stretch goals that are out there. Lots of add-ons. The dice look fantastic. Everything you've put into this looks just flat out amazing.
You know, I'll tell you, just the call we had right before this one was locking down Minis and Terrain. So we're going to put that up here today or tomorrow. So nowhere to go but up.
There you go. You got me in. You got me. Well, I mean, you had me before I already did it, but that's fine. You got me. We're good on this one now.
Yep. So it should be a great time.
Again, thank you so much to B. Dave Walters and Tanya DePass for coming on the show and be able to talk about this. Into the Motherlands is still going on the Kickstarter. Check it out. Really amazing. I really do love it. Instead of tabletop RPGs, now, though, we need to talk about board games, BJ.
Well, we have to give a little love to a Kickstarter out there from our buddy Sean from the old Board Game Alliance, which hopefully will come back someday once the COVID stops. Sean, our buddy Sean Epperson and Think 12 Games, they've released the third in the Dice of series.
Yeah.
There was Dice of Crowns, there was Dice of Pirates, and now there's Dice of Dragons on Kickstarter now.
Oh, yeah. Again.
And the difference with this one is it's a cooperative game. Instead of playing against each other, you're all playing against the dragon.
Ooh.
And it can play up to six people, which is kind of cool. It's a 1-6 player game. You're all taking roles of these valiant adventurers. So there's a little bit like one of you can be the rogue, maybe one of you can be the warrior, you know, that kind of deal. And you are trying to basically capture gold from the dragon and win the favor of the crowd. And of course, you're going to be rolling dice. And if you know about the Dice of Crowns game, the components are always good, and the Dice of Pirates game. So there'll be awesome looking dice, and there'll be some gold coins involved that you're trying to steal from the dragon. And you've got energy tokens and specialized powers. And it is really a nice turn on its head in the Dice of series. A lot of stuff that you love from Dice of Crowns and Dice of Pirates, you'll see in there, but with some new ideas that will be part of the cooperative experience. You're going to be pushing your luck, rolling that dice, having a blast. And I do believe one of the Kickstarter stretch goals is that some people designed an integration game with Dice of Crowns so that both games combined together will make a whole new game experience. So
interesting.
Yeah, and I believe that stretch goal is up there. It's one of the first ones. I got to be thinking it's going to be met, and then you'll be able to actually integrate both games. And it all fits in, of course, a mint tin, you know, pretty much one of those Altoid tin sizes, which is what the Dice of series is known for. It looks good. It really, really looks good. I played some earlier versions of this game way back in the day, and I'm looking forward to playing the latest version because he's made a lot of changes. And, I've enjoyed both Dice of Crowns and Dice of Pirates. It's a great game to play as one of your first games of the night, or if you're at a bar because you don't really need much space because it just comes in a mint tin can.
Absolutely.
And you're just always chucking dice, and that's always fun. And this time you're trying to beat the damn dragon, so you're all working together while you're having your brew, making it happen. It's called Dice of Dragons. You got to check this out. If you like the other two, Dice of Crowns, Dice of Pirates, you're going to love Dice of Dragons on Kickstarter now.
Absolutely. A lot of fun with all of that. And I will probably have Sean on in the future as it's getting down towards the end of the old Kickstarter to remind everyone to have some fun with that, and also to have some fun and harass him a a little bit, because it's always fun to talk with Sean, especially since he is your board game nemesis.
Exactly, and he'll give us more info, and maybe by then we'll know if we can integrate Dice of Crowns with Dice of Dragons.
Exactly. I mean, the simple fact is that they've already funded. Like, that's just fantastic. Like, congratulations. They did that super quick, but also that means getting into them stretch goals. And the best part about with something like this is that Sean has done a bunch of stuff with Thing 12 Games, including the Kickstarters of, we just talked about Dice of Pirates and Dice of Crowns as well. So it's they know how to go through all the hoops and all the hullabaloo of Kickstarter. So they bring out a great fine product.
And their last two games were Dice Tower approved by Tom Vassell. So
really? I mean,
yeah, Thing 12 Games is really, really just, you know, they're becoming a really well, you know, a well-known and, you know, having a reputation for making good games. Dinos Not Assembled was Tom Vassell liked that game a lot. And also Seals of Cthulhu, which is the two-player game that Sean designed and Thing 12 did. And that was also received very well. The components of that game are insane, I think. And that's the thing is that, you know, the component quality, because, you know, Sean plays a lot with us, and I think he's learned we're component whores. I mean, we really, really are. I mean, you give us components, we'll buy it. We don't care.
Right.
And so Thing 12 Games is really getting a reputation of putting together some really sweet looking games, as well as good playing games.
Exactly. A lot of fun with all of that. Now, we're going from something that we're just heaping praise upon with Dice of Dragons to, well,
meh.
Jupiter's,
not where, meh.
Meh. Jupiter's Legacy is on Netflix right now. The 8-episode first season has dropped. And if you don't know anything about that, it's based on a comic written by Mark Millar, who has done Kick-Ass, a couple of other things like Nemesis and some other. I think he might have done the Kingsman as well.
Yes, that's
okay,
the one.
Perfect. Awesome. And so this is Jupiter's Legacy is essentially about superpowered old people who have to deal with the multi-generational problems of their kids who are also superpowered. And I don't really want to talk bad about stuff, but
it wasn't bad.
It wasn't. And visually, it was great. I just feel that there have been other stories out there revolving around superheroes and maybe the superhero familial problems that have just kind of done this better. And
yeah.
I haven't read the source material, so I don't know if, in fact, people love Mark Millar's book so much that, okay, we're going to make a series and it was just not done well, or if Mark Millar's Jupiter's Legacy wasn't exactly like a raving success. I don't know to be able to say.
Yeah, and the problem with it also, like, he did produce this, so he was down for it. Just reading about the back and forth between the things that have changed from the comics to this, it feels like there was a lot of stuff that was kind of just left on the table in terms of, like, world building. Mm-hmm. We've talked previously, especially with something like The Nevers or even Shadow and Bone, where their world building was really, really good. With this one, there were just a lot of weird ticky-tacky questions that I had that were, like, nagging at me the whole time. Like,
it's more than just a world building. I think it's very much the mystery. Because when you're watching this, and we're spoiling it, right? Because
we can spoil it.
You're watching, it's two stories in one.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching what's going on currently in today's time, but then you're getting what's happened in the past. Basically, what's the kids and the parents all allude to, oh, it was very hard for us. Basically, they're the first generation A of superheroes, and it was very hard for them to get their powers as opposed to the kids who were just born into it. Which I guess could be a metaphor for everything.
Yeah.
But you get to see how it came about. And I like that story better than the current times. But you do get left with a lot of questions. It's like, okay, well, but why? Why did it happen?
And the big problem is I was totally invested in the flashbacks. Like, yes. I thought that was amazing and it was great. And I just felt I didn't care about really any of the characters.
Yes,
at all.
That's the best way to describe it. And it's not so much, there's shows and movies you can watch and you're like, I don't care about the characters in the sense, I hope they all die because they're all horrible people. And that's not the case here, because there are good people and they're fighting, you know, their code, if you will. It's like what used to be good, like, you know, the old values and stuff. We need to hold those because the world's going to crap and we should still hold on to those. And you have other people fighting. Well, maybe we should change because times have changed. We should change. So there's that battle, which is, you know, relatable. We understand that. But I also, like, none of these characters were compelling enough to be, like, if you die, I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah. There's a giant plot hole in this, and this is why it's not sitting well with us. And it's a giant plot hole, and I don't know if it's in the main book, but it's the glaringest plot hole ever, and this is why it falls flat in my mind, is that we watched the opening episode where basically all of the heroes are getting their asses kicked to the point it looks like they're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, well, they're all going to die, and this is a beating. But okay, and the next thing you know, one of the heroes who's supposedly not even supposed to be ready, and I would just assume isn't strong enough. You know, I think of Invincible, who's not as strong as his dad yet.
Yeah.
You know, just as far as development. Then one of the heroes who we think is lame and can't handle it, who got his ass kicked at the way beginning of the episode by a lesser hero, it turns out now we know why he got his ass kicked. It's because he's holding back. But my brain goes, wait, you have two settings? It's either...
it's all or nothing.
Yeah, it's all or nothing, because basically what happens is they're getting their asses kicked. They all look like they're going to die. Then one person says, I can't let this happen. So he kills the bad villain. But my brain is like, you didn't figure out a way to be able to incapacitate the villain with your superpower. It was either he kills you or you kill him. You couldn't knock him out with like maybe 3/4 strength or 7/8 strength. Like, you wouldn't keep escalating your punches until it would knock him out. You either had, you know, I had 0 or I had 11. You know, turn it up to 11.
And I will
and that
say
that irritated me. That, oh, that whole thing irritated me.
That character is so, I guess, one-dimensional.
Well, and that's the thing, is like
all of them are.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they all are.
All of the characters are super flat.
I have one that I'm like, I'm not saying he's like phenomenal, but he's the least flat of them all.
Which one?
And I'm blanking on his name, but he's the son of Sky Fox.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I keep wanting to call him Star Fox, but I know that's not true.
And he doesn't have powers himself.
No, he is the
he's
son.
Got a little... Hutch? I think you're talking about Hutch.
Yes.
Okay, Hutch.
Yeah, played by
Hutch,
Ian Quinlan, yeah.
So he doesn't have any superpowers. He's the son of the quote-unquote greatest supervillain, mm-hmm. but we kind of find out that that might not be the case, actually. And I do have to say, my gut instinct was right at the beginning. When I watched the first episode, I'm like, this guy, something's not sitting well with this other guy. I'm like, you're probably a bad guy. And I kind of forgot about it. I'm like, whatever, maybe I'm just reading too much into it. And then I was right!
And it's,
at the very end.
And it was one of those things, like, if you've read the comic books, there's going to be a lot of spoiler stuff, but there's a lot of diversions from the original source material.
And boy, that could be a problem if, in fact, the diversions make this less enjoyable.
And it just didn't seem interesting to me in the terms of, the only reason why I ended up watching the entire thing is because I wanted to see all the flashbacks and how it has happened, but that still kind of also fell flat. And then the last episode, I was just like, all right, well, I've seen it. Do I want to come back and watch the second season if they make a second season? I have nothing else.
And I really, you know, and I'm sorry, but
that's
kind of
mean, but
yeah, but you know what, dude, the other thing, this is what irritated me also about Wonder Woman 84. It's you when you're alive for so long, you're going to get some therapy and get over it because you're alive longer than a human being should be alive. So well, they've been, that's it. Yeah. They have long lifespans. So, you know, they were able to, you know, they show you in the flashback that in order to get these powers, and you need to get these powers, otherwise you will die. Like,
you started the journey, there's no turning back. Either you die or you complete the mission, if you will.
So then, you know, at the end, when they get there, whoever decides they're worthy enough goes, well, first you got to work out your differences. And so it's obvious that the two brothers have differences. And then they figure it out within 5 minutes.
Without saying anything. They just look at each other like, we need to get over this.
But so if the aliens, and they were hating each other for the longest time. I mean, because you see that. You see that in that journey that the older brother's not digging the younger brother. So they figure it out. They figure it out. And then 70 years later, after cooperating and beating all the... all of a sudden, the brother's like, oh, you know what? I decide I hate you again. When in reality, the younger brother seems a lot nicer than he was back in the day.
And that was the biggest inconsistency of the whole thing. It's obvious that he didn't get over it. And so at that
point... how is he able to get the powers unless
it's
stupid?
Yes! That's a huge plot hole.
That's the only reason why I will actually sit and watch a second season if I'm not even sure if they're getting it or not.
I dare you to explain this.
Right. I don't know if they do. But I actually am curious to see if they actually fix it, or like, can you give me, because there's, I want to see the stewing. I want to see the thought process behind it.
Can I just say it's been great hearing everyone else complain about a show for once?
What's great is the fact that we're all agreeing.
I know. I feel like we're channeling our inner Joe, though.
We are.
Joe's, like, Joe's ruined us all.
And then Joe, I mean, you know, you've seen this before where something doesn't sit quite right. And suddenly you start looking at everything with a fine tooth comb. Like, and my wife was doing this, and she never does this, but she's just like, wait, okay, so this all happened to them in, like, the 1930s, and now they've aged slower because it's the 2020s right. at this point. They've really kind of established that. But what about the kids? Like, why, like, when were they, like, do they age slower? Are they, like, 90s babies, but they still only look like, you know, 20s and teenagers because they age slower or not? There's so many tiny inconsistencies that they just pick at you, and then you're just like, I don't enjoy this, but I need some resolution. And then you don't get resolution. You just get more questions. And then you're like, but why did they do that? Why did he do that? How did he make this thing? Is this guy even a villain?
Why
is this thing a vision? I don't even know what's going on. I had to read articles.
What is this thing? And why does this person have it as opposed to maybe the child of that person? Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I will say this, and I feel like this must be the core idea. And, you know, I guess people went along with this with Mark Millar, but I'm sorry, but I just don't believe that you can have a code. I believe you can have a code saying you're not going to kill. I get that that's your code. But I can't believe it's either you die or they die. It's like, it's, you know, that's what irritated me. It's like you can incapacitate somebody. If you're strong enough to kill them, you should be strong enough to knock them out.
You know what?
That's what irritated me.
I got something that probably pissed you off even more.
Oh, thanks.
Well, the idea of, well, times are changing. Villains are changing. Are you saying up until this point, all the villains are fine with it? We're not going to kill each other. We're going to do the bad stuff we're going to do. And if we fight each other, I'm not going to kill you and you're not going to kill me. So it's fine.
Yeah, they lived through World War II, Vicky. You're right. They lived through World War II.
Are they just not going to, like, okay, well, I guess you beat me. Guess I'm going to jail now. I didn't kill you. You didn't kill me. But, like, one day, like, you know what? Maybe we should change our mind. Maybe we should. Even Hutch at one point, he's like, you know what? This was never my game, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to beat this a-hole now. I'm going to kill.
Right. Yeah, and that's the problem. Humans have never shown the capacity to not kill. Now, granted, there used to be rules like, you know, maybe you wouldn't bother women and children. At least that on the surface, that's what it was. But, you know, maybe that could change. But the idea that you would not ever kill in defense of the needs of the many is just it's unbelievable to me. I really just feel like at some point, you know, even Doctor Who sometimes will go, I really don't want to do this to you, but you're sure you don't want to turn back? And then eventually, like, no, and like, it's like, all right, well, you did this to yourself. It's just, it's an unbelievable concept that a hero would never kill somebody, even against their, even if they didn't want to.
Well, to put a nice little bow on this little S-Fest that we're doing on it, Rotten Tomatoes is giving it a 38%.
Yeah. Audience?
I think it's the critics. Critic. Yeah.
Audience is 72.
Well, okay, it's a little bit better. Maybe the audience is a little more forgiving,
I think it's
like
probably
it.
This is more of a palatable show for non, you know, critical nerds like us.
Okay,
I think if you're like the average Joe Schmo, Joey D's. Yeah. but I do want to give a few random either notes or shout outs.
Okay.
Tyler Mayne, I love Tyler Mayne and everything he does. So
he
him
was
as Black Star. The makeup they did was pretty awesome. Anna Akana, who was the daughter of
Walt.
Of Walt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She also played in a show that I talked about years ago. She, I think, wrote it or directed it. It was a cheesy little show. It was super cool. It was like Miss 2029, where she was a beauty queen, and what she didn't know is her sister was in the military, but she was competing and training to basically, it's like a Hunger Games, but of planets.
Oh, okay.
So just reminded me of something else I hated about this, by the way.
Okay, but
a massive plot hole, a massive storytelling hole, actually. I'll let you finish, Vicky, but I just remembered something else that made me hate this show.
But she was phenomenal in that. And that show was funny because you had all this really awesome makeup and different aliens, and then you have this one little alien which looks like a Pomeranian, but it's a Muppet. Puppet kind of a thing.
That's what got you there.
If you ever have a chance, it's cheesy, but it's fun. She ends up getting stuck in the competition, so she has to fight for the world, even though she's a beauty queen and doesn't know how to fight.
That's funny.
It was actually a pretty cool show, so I wanted to give her a shout out because I love when she's doing stuff. And then, did anybody else know that the annoying daughter, Chloe, kind of looks like a young Winona Ryder with that black hair.
Absolutely.
I wanted to play Winona Ryder.
Elena Camporis.
Yes.
Yeah, she did look like that. Okay, BJ, before we get to the geek sheet, what was your other plot hole that you just realized?
This is an annoying storytelling device that I feel like really robbed the viewer. The big twist in this show is that one of the good guys is a bad guy.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh.
And he's the one that pretty much set everything into motion, and we're spoiling it. So basically, there's a clone of the bad guy Blackstar, and the clone is almost kicks everybody's ass. And at one point, the one that has the Professor X like powers, he tries to control the bad guy. We then see it from the Professor X perspective, where the bad guy almost chokes him to death. And I'm like, but you're the bad guy orchestrating all of this, so you're fooling me, the audience, when in reality, this wouldn't be how it went down in his head. It wouldn't have gone down that way in his head because he knew what he was doing. Nobody else saw that, but the audience, like the rest of the crew, the rest of the heroes fighting, did not see him on the beach with that guy who said, I'm God in here, and then all of a sudden lets the guy choke him. Like, who did they show that to us for? It made me think that, oh, wow, this guy is even stronger than Mental Head Guy. That's bad storytelling, because in reality, he was the one that let him do it. And therefore, I mean, how am I supposed to even... It's just horrible storytelling. It's like, no, that's for nobody except to try to fool me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be fooled that way.
Yeah.
Horrible storytelling. And again, if Millar did it that way in the book, then bad on him. But I'd have to read the... I almost want to read the book to see
that,
how close this is to it.
Jupiter's Legacy is... It's a mini-series, so it's only 10 issues long. And it's probably in trade. I'm going to go down to... my local comic book store, Destiny City Comics in Tacoma. I'm gonna get it because I want to read this, and it's got to be better. Like, I love Mark Millar's comics, and there's always a funness to them, even if they're super gross and a lot of the times they're a little gory. But I love that sort of aspect with that, and I don't think this is going to be any different. I just want to see how different this is from the show, and if it's better, because I know I've even talked about it online, and other people have been like, check out the comic. It's by far better than the show.
That
so
makes sense.
Maybe made a terrible conspiracy hat on here, but maybe made a terrible show so people will buy the comics. I don't know.
Well, and the other problem is that you've got shows like The Nevers, shows like The Boys. You've just got better programs that do these kind of things better. I mean, especially with the characters, you know.
Yeah.
Characters are so wooden. Like, outside of Hutch, the characters are just, and maybe you just got to take your hat off to Ian Quinlan, who performed his ass off in that.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just a great actor, and I can't wait to see more stuff with him.
Well, let's get done yelling about this and get to
the Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, what do you got for us?
So on Friday, I talked about different movies, one of them being A Quiet Place 2, directed and screenwritten by John Krasinski. And I came across Cinema Blend did a list of Marvel characters that John Krasinski would be perfect for, because we always talk about how him and Emily Blunt need to play Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman.
Yeah, and there have been recent reports that say Emily Blunt is like I don't want to do a superhero movie at all.
Unless it's like a really compelling, awesome character like that she connects with, she's not really down for it. So that kind of kills that dream. But I mean, John Krasinski could still play Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Which, funny enough, is the last one on this list.
Which I would figure, I mean, that's the one everybody says. Mm-hmm. And I just feel, and they're really kind of just basing it off of like his facial features when it comes down to it.
But we know he is a good actor, like we talked about on Friday. But these are some other characters were picked. And I don't know these characters.
Ooh, okay. This will be fun. Let's see if we can see if BJ and I can nerdsplain you some characters.
I'm going to know none of them if Vicky doesn't know me.
Right. And this is Marvel, so all of Marvel Comics, not just MCU type characters.
Okay.
First one being Maverick.
Oh, see, BG might not even know Maverick. Nope. I don't know if you do. Okay, so he's a 90s creation.
Okay.
Think of like Cable, but with a cooler mask and like all gold, but it was basically like a Rob Liefeld sort of creation where it's like lots of guns, lots of pouches, and I think he probably came from the future because all that stuff is always confusing as all hell.
So according to this, you know, the reason why John Krasinski would be good at this is because he's played Jack Ryan, and so he has experience portraying an American hero in the field of espionage. And so apparently Maverick, the current alias of the East Germany-born mercenary Christopher Nord, who has also gone by Agent Zero since the guilt over killing his double agent wife drove him to enter to the Weapon X program. His is a story that I believe would be interesting to cover when the X-Men get rebooted in the MCU, and it would be a unique challenge to Krasinski to embody a grieving widower as well as develop a convincing German accent.
That would be interesting. Just in the terms of, like, I think that's such a character that is so deep that I wouldn't imagine them actually doing that character. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Iron Man was, what, third tier at best when Robert Downey Jr. made him one of the top Marvel characters of all time.
Not to mention Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Next one. Do you guys know Major Victory?
No, I don't know.
Love the name.
I don't know Major Victory.
Honestly, this is a name that sounds like it should be in, Jupiter's Legacy or in The Boys.
Yeah.
Major Victory.
It's not even better, though, if you look at his other stuff, because apparently his other name, like his actual name, not his pseudonym or whatever, is Vance Astro.
What?
It
Vance
sounds like
Astro.
A dog
that sounds
name.
Very familiar.
And it's... The thing that kind of cracks me up is if y'all remember back on the show back in the day, Brandon Jerwa,
yes.
I think he went as Vance Astro as one of his radio DJ monikers back in the day.
That's how I know that name.
Yeah. So I was like, why is that familiar? And it just clicked. Oh, yeah. So I don't even know anything about this weird guy.
Okay, so the reason why the writer of this article decides, hey, I would love to see him possibly portrayed Major Victory is apparently there's a story about John Krasinski's Captain America audition and how it was cut short by the discouraging sight of Chris Hemsworth in his Thor costume. And, I mean, we're all glad that we got Chris Evans as Steve Rogers. He was phenomenal. But this person says, I like the idea of giving Krasinski a role similar to the Star-Spangled Avenger and would have cited U.S. Agent as a potential name if not for the Falcon Winter Soldier cast Wyatt Russell as John Walker. But no worries, however, because I have a much cooler character in mind for Krasinski known as Major Victory, a psychokinetic space traveler with former Guardians of the Galaxy, who was a former Guardians of the Galaxy leader, who in many ways could be considered the Captain America of Marvel's cosmic lineup, and not just because he has wielded the same shield at one point.
There's a whole picture that just shows him wielding the shield, and you're like... Okay.
He's kind of got the top half of him has kind of got a Dr. Manhattan vibe.
Yeah.
Just all blue, bald guy.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, all right. I don't know anything about him, but again, I hardly knew anything about the original Guardians of the Galaxy, so sure.
This is going deep, is all I got to say.
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm like, deep, I don't know any of these. Maybe some of the Geek Nationals might. Here's another one with a fantastic name. Wonder Man.
Oh no, oh, Wonder Man. Wonder Man is a legit guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do we know him as?
Wonder Man.
Wasn't he kind of like this? Was he kind of like, was that Henry Pym or somebody close to Pym, or he grew up like a giant? He's like a giant man.
I don't really remember a whole lot of him. He just seemed to be almost like a generic superhero type guy.
I thought he was a big dude. I thought he was like a giant.
Wonder Man used to be an ordinary person of was extraordinarily wealthy until he was found guilty of embezzlement and, per the recommendation of one Baron Zemo, volunteered to participate in an experiment which made him one of the most powerful superhuman.
Oh.
But that honestly wouldn't make sense because Zemo doesn't like superhumans.
Well, that's the MCU one. They'll change the ideas
exactly,
on all
that's
of that,
what I mean.
You know?
Beings in the Marvel Universe, however, in addition to having abilities including flight, shape-shifting, and nearly anything else you could imagine, he also suffers from mental illness that has since made him a pacifist. And this would be yet another acting challenge for Krasinski or any actor, and would be proud to attempt a comic book movie as far as I'm concerned. So apparently this character's also, his real name is Simon Williams, which is a very...
And he's had a lot of stuff going on with Guardians of the Galaxy, House of M, and a lot of those other different sort of things, like the Kree and the Skrull. So he has those connections. So I could see him coming into it. I just don't really necessarily know enough of him. Like, I've heard of him, but that's about it.
Yeah, these are deep. These are deep.
Super deep.
And last one, obviously before Mr. Fantastic, is a character called Hyperion.
Hyperion?
So speaking of superheroes who sound like the Marvel Comics equivalent of famous DC comic characters, that distinction is often given to Hyperion, a superhero originally a villain born on an alien planet with the debilitating vulnerability to Argonite radiation, Well, I don't know about you, but Krasinski could have made a good Superman if not for Henry Cavill being the spitting image of Clark Kent, which is why I think casting him as a character often cited as his Marvel clone would be the next best thing, and a great opportunity for him to flex his comedic skills again to help the MCU poke fun at Hyperion's similarities of a Man of Steel. And of course, you could already know, like, there is only one Marvel character we really want to see him play, which is Mr. Fantastic.
Like, when it comes down to all these characters, like, Maverick, just because I know it, but, like, the character isn't really that interesting. All of these characters, like BJ said, super deep, a little bit too much when it comes down to it, in that sort of, like, almost seems like comic book hipster. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, I would love this one. And I'm like, well...
Flannel Man?
Oh, you want Flannel Man?
Yeah,
or just get Flannel, like, Man. Strange Explodey Man or something like that.
Flannel they had Man from Explodey Seattle Man. With the power to make delicious coffee.
Oh, there you go. Okay, fine.
Well, until next time, guys. Stay nerdy.